Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you?
I'm doing good, man.
You know that I love teaching more than anything? Well, not anything, but a lot. I like teaching a lot.
It's high on the list.
Yeah, you know, and so many people have been so gracious to teach us over the years so much stuff. You know, I mean, Dale DeGroff teaching us about cocktails, Kevin Zarelli teaching us about wine. People going out of their way to show us stuff years ago that, you know, they probably, I don't know, it's not a proprietary look at information. It's about sharing knowledge and discovering new knowledge. And I love doing that with other people. And we did a cocktail class at the restaurant recently where we got to teach about cocktails and show people how to do these cocktails.
You know, so many industries are so secretive about how they do things and how and what we'll call the recipes, their formulas of what they do. And it just seems, and I'm not sure why it is, but it seems like the people in our industries are so interested in giving out recipes and trying to teach people how to make things and create things on their own.
I'm reminded of a story. Our partner in the restaurant, in both of our restaurants, is a wonderful man and a dear friend named Lou Rivero. And Lou was with us from the very beginning. And Lou, Mark and I were always more New York-centered in our social lives and our dining experiences. And
We're from North Jersey. I mean, I grew up 10 minutes outside of New York City.
And Lou is more Philadelphia-centered, which is, you know, in New Jersey, you sort of pull one way or the other. And Georges Perrier was for many years the chef of Philadelphia and is still the preeminent chef of Philadelphia. His restaurant is Le Bec Fin, and one of the top restaurants in Philly, one of the top French restaurants in America, according to many people. Anyway, Lou used to hang out with George occasionally. He was dining in his restaurant so much that he would occasionally sit at their table and whatever. And Lou relates this story where he said to George Perrier, he said, you know, someone came up and asked George for a recipe, and he gave them the recipe. And Lou said, you know, George, anytime anyone asks you for a recipe, you always just you give them the recipe. Aren't you worried that you know, someone will steal your recipes
and George and become, you know, the greatest restaurateur in all of Philadelphia?
Well, and George Perry is reputed to have turned to Lou and said, Lou, if Picasso were here and you walked up to him and said, Picasso, how do I paint Guernica? And he told you, do you think you could go home and paint it? And I thought, yeah, I got it. Because it's like a Cole Porter song, man. Cooking is your interpretation of that song, of that food, of that dish. But so, you know, with these cocktails, and we did a lot of seasonal cocktails, look, the people who make them at home are going to change them. Their ice is going to be different. Their ingredients are going to be slightly different. We did a lot of cocktails that use fruit and herbs and mint. Mm-hmm. And the idea of these cocktails, when we opened our restaurant and put together the cocktail program at Catherine Lombardi, which is the first serious cocktail program we put together, we did a lot of research on old books. Some of those ingredients you can't find anymore. Mm-hmm. We had to make our own bitters. We had to make our own ginger beer because the kind of ginger beer you get now isn't that kind of ginger beer. We had to make our own grenadine out of pomegranates, not the corn syrup laden garbage that you find on the shelf today.
And so much of what we're doing in these situations and when we're building cocktails, and that's what we do, we build cocktails, is it's by feel. And yes, there's a recipe. Yes, there's a formula to follow, but you can't follow that formula exactly because today's lime is different than tomorrow's lime and is certainly different than a lime in the middle of a different season.
And your own taste and your own palate's going to be different. And so, yeah, we'll give you the recipes for cocktails, and you, well, except for a couple of them. But, you know, that's the idea. We taught people how to make cocktails, and hopefully, you know, we taught them how to make a dozen cocktails. Mm-hmm. And people loved the class. But I think the idea is hopefully we gave them a sense of how to make their own cocktails out of different ingredients going forward. You know, it's the same philosophy that we apply to food, we apply to cocktails. Mm-hmm. You don't want artificial flavors and prepackaged and preprocessed stuff. You want herbs and spices and juices and real liquors and egg whites and things like that. It's funny that we talk about artificial flavors because you went after the cocktail class and had dinner with friends.
Oh, hysterical.
And so, found yourself.
So immediately after the cocktail class, we did it on a Sunday afternoon, I leave the cocktail class and I kind of hustle out of there because I'm meeting some friends for dinner at a restaurant that they've chosen. And it's one of these hibachi restaurants where the guy's flipping the shrimp into his hat and tossing the zucchini into your mouth off of it. And, you know, fairly New Jersey cheese is what's going on at this restaurant. But I found it horribly ironic that I was teaching about how to make the best cocktails
with integrity
that you could possibly have using fresh juices and how important all the ingredients that you use are. And less than 30 minutes later, I was drinking a zombie out of Buddha's belly button. And I'm sure I've offended somebody because it's not really Buddha. It's some other god that looks big, fat god that
it's
looks
Buddha.
like Buddha.
No? Well, and I'm sure that was made with
a lot of love, a lot of care, a lot of stuff.
Well, and then Mark and I went out to dinner at a restaurant where we actually had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of respect for the owner of this restaurant, but there are a few things where he missed. And by the way, this is a guy, and I'm going to make a criticism of it, and there's no reason to name the restaurant. But the restaurant overall, if you're listening, we had a great time,
mm-hmm.
and we think they do a great job at a lot of what they do, and they have some amazing ingredients. But we ordered dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some sort of flambé dessert thing. They did a Cherry's Jubilee, but they also did some other berry flambé.
It was a berry jubilee with blackberries and strawberries and things like that, as opposed to doing it with cherries.
But one of the ingredients in this flaming,
and there was brandy and some really good ingredients in this dessert.
But one of the ingredients was watermelon pucker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, watermelon pucker. What did I say? It's, you know, pucker is to cocktails as Twinkies are to cake.
Yeah, it's the Jolly Rancher of what alcohol is. And so, what they did is they took these beautiful, beautiful fresh strawberries and fresh blackberries, and they were local and very tasty on their own. And they flambéed them with some nice brandy. They didn't use a very cheap brandy, and then they finished it with this watermelon pucker that kind of left this candy coating on the fruit and in dessert and in the sauce and over the ice cream. And I just thought, you were so close.
Yeah.
You know, you had all the ingredients. You had fresh berries. They were nice, expensive, clearly very expensive berries.
But they charge us for them, though.
I don't
feel bad about that.
Yes, they did. That was a $28 dessert, by the way.
Was it really?
Yes, it was.
For how many?
For two.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? They spent $1 million on berries, mm-hmm. but then they doused them in watermelon
pucker.
It's the same as, you know, one of the drinks that's out there is an apple martini. And you know what? You may like an apple martini, and I hate to insult our listeners. But that apple martini made with apple pucker tastes like an apple Jolly Rancher.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an adult and you're old enough to drink martinis, you should have... You would never accept a sorbet that tasted like that.
Right.
You would never accept a sauce in your dish that tasted like that. So why do you accept that artificial flavor in your cocktail? It doesn't need to be that sweet. It doesn't need to be that fake. And we make...
If you want a Jolly Rancher, have a Jolly Rancher. That's my point. Don't stick it in your drink.
And we make an apple cocktail, quote-unquote apple martini, at our bar. It doesn't matter what's in ours. I'm not going to give you the recipe of ours. If you want, come to the restaurant and ask for it. But you can make some sort of cocktail at home and use... Applejack, made right here in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they have
apple
what's brands. Available in New Jersey is they have a Apple Laird's makes a bottled and bond apple brandy that's amazing. Use apple juice, okay, as part of your cocktail, and create something that's real. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:15. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Dwayne Ridgeway. He likes to write niche cookbooks. He's the author of Indoor Grilling, Perfect One-Dish Meals, Pizza, Sandwiches, Paninis, and Wraps. And he joins us today to speak about one of our favorite ways to cook at home. His most recent book is entitled Cast Iron Cooking, 50 Gourmet Quality Dishes from Entrees to Desserts.
Hey, Dwayne. Welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, thank you. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, cast iron cooking for a long time was my grandmother had the cast iron skillet for the pancakes that she used every day for 60 years. That was seasoned beautifully.
It wasn't just for the pancakes. It was for everything.
Right.
Absolutely.
It was everything.
No, no, no. She had one of those like two burner skillets for the pancakes in the morning. That was amazing.
That went right over the top of the whole stovetop.
And then my sisters they left in the basement to rot the cast iron cookery. that I then found there and said, oh, my God, look at this. And I brought it back to my house, and I adore it. And so it was out of really out of fashion for a long time, and now cast iron cookery's back in fashion.
The first set of pots and pans that I ever bought myself was a cast iron set of everything. Part of the reason was I couldn't afford all the Teflon coated super fancy schmancy stuff.
Exactly, it was reasonable. It was affordable. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So why is cast iron cookery back in fashion all of a sudden?
Well, I think everything that was old is coming back in fashion across the board, not only in the culinary world, but I think, in my opinion, a lot of the resurgence is due to people like, you know, the Emeralds and the Bobby Flays and Mario Batali, who have brought it back into the picture,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
really shown how popular, and not to mention the marketing of great cast iron producers, too, that make them very elegant and desirable.
Well, you know, elegant or not, one of the things that I think is very interesting, I now have some cast iron cookery at home that has some wooden handles, but
mm-hmm.
a lot of the cast iron the pans and stuff that I had at home doesn't have any wood at all. It's just one piece of iron. And what's interesting is you could take that. I remember reading an article about cast iron cookware when it was still unfashionable, someone talking about bringing it back, and I can't for the life of me. I went to look for it before the show.
Mm-hmm.
Can't for the life of me remember who wrote it, but it said something like, you know, with all this modern fancy stuff, you have to be very careful with your Teflon-coated pan, and you can't use a scrubby brush on it, whereas the cast iron stuff you could bury in the backyard. Leave it buried for 4 years, go out, dig it up, and cook on it again.
Where's the cast iron pan? Oh, it's in the doghouse. I'll go
it's in the doghouse. Well, not, you know, just like your sister's trying to leave it in the basement to rot. It doesn't rot.
Right, right. Well, talk to us, though, about with a cast iron pan with no finish on it, that can be almost a nonstick surface. Talk to us about seasoning cast iron pans, because I think that intimidates some people. And cast iron pans need to be seasoned so they're not rusty and sticky.
Correct.
Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. It's really not as intimidating or as hard as it might seem to be. It's simply a process of baking a fat or an oil onto, specifically a vegetable oil, onto the surface of the cast iron. So if you find, you know, today you can go out and buy pre-seasoned cast iron, which is a great product and very user-friendly. If you're buying other more unique pans that aren't pre-seasoned or you're finding older ones, basically, you want to start with just scrubbing the dish, scrubbing the pan in soapy hot water, and with a hard bristled brush, really scrubbing it nicely, drying it thoroughly. Some people say towel dry it and go right on from there. I suggest putting it in the oven, and you want to preheat your oven to about 350 beginning this process. And I suggest putting all your cast iron in the oven and letting it dry for about, you know, 5 minutes. Take it out of the oven, spray it down with a vegetable cooking spray, or rub it with a kitchen towel with vegetable oil.
Olive oil will do, right?
Olive oil will do. It certainly will. But it's actually better to use a more vegetable or canola oil.
Okay.
Because of the smoking point of those mm-hmm. oils and the spoiling factor as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just coat your pan, your skillet, inside and out, and put it on another tray and put it in your oven and bake it for an hour. And you take it out, and what that's doing is baking that oil into the surface and creating that layer of what, you know, is some people refer to as the original Teflon.
Right, is the seasoning on top of the cast iron.
The seasoning.
And one of the things that I don't know if we really made clear, a cast iron pan could look like it's dead. It can look like it's a piece of garbage. It could be rusty and beat up and look like it could never be returned to life. And with 15 minutes of tender loving care, all of a sudden that cast iron pan is usable again.
Absolutely. You know, rusty, if you find them in antique stores, those old vintage names of cast iron, and you find them hanging and they've got rust on them, just scrub that rust. You know, get an SOS pad or a hard bristle brush and scrub it away. Stay away from warped and cracked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. Well, you know, one of the things that I think is very interesting at home is I have a woman who cleans my house for me,
mm-hmm.
and she always wants to grab the cast iron pan that I leave on my stove, the one that I use most often, and wash it with soap and water.
Right.
So tell us about that. You shouldn't do that, right?
Shouldn't do that, because what you're doing is the soap, you know, you see all those commercials where the soap's breaking away the oil. That's exactly what it's doing to your cast iron pan. It's breaking down the coating that you've spent so long trying to get on there. Quite frankly, the more you use it, that's where the cast iron, that's why people love it. That's where the flavor's coming from, because you're building up that coating and those layers of flavoring.
And my cleaning lady's like, Francis, you're just going to get sick one day from eating all of this dirty pan all the time. But she knows that I get mad. She cleaned it once, and I got really mad.
That pan gets plenty hot on the stovetop. So.
Yeah, exactly. Kills a lot of germs. Hey, yeah. When we come back, we'll be talking more with Dwayne Ridgeway about his new book, Cast Iron Cooking, one of our favorite ways to cook. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Dwayne Ridgeway. His book is Cast Iron Cooking. Dwayne, I have heard that when you cook with cast iron, that it increases the amount of iron in the food.
It does. That is, I learned that. I had never known that growing up with cast iron, but I learned that doing my research for the book, and it does. It has, there is kind of a residual iron that comes from the pan into the food, and it's, there are people out there that have iron deficiencies that are doing that, and they specifically use cast iron for that.
Now, that's not like mercury or lead. I'm not going to get in trouble putting these things in my body, am I?
No, absolutely not. It's, and you know, I can't speak as far as a doctor, but it's definitely, you know, iron is a resource that we need in our bodies, in our systems. So it's definitely a good, healthy way of cooking.
And by the way, mercury is something we don't really need in our bodies, for those of you who didn't know.
And I just want to point out something when we talk about Teflon versus cast iron. Now, we don't know that you get Teflon in your body from cooking in Teflon, but we do know that you get iron in your body from cooking with iron. Mm-hmm. And while iron is something I want in my body, Teflon is something I do not want.
And we do know that you get lead in your body from eating lead.
Yeah.
And so let's see. Let's try and
coming
add that
together
up.
Here. So have you always cooked with cast iron, or have you recently rediscovered it as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have growing up. I it was always around me, and it was a staple. As you were talking about your pancake skillet there, my mother, still to this day, you can open her oven, and there is a cast iron skillet with the bacon grease, and she fries the bacon in it every morning.
Love it.
It's awesome. My grandmother, as a matter of fact, one of my recipes, the burgundy beef stew, is in my grandmother's heirloom Dutch oven. That was kind of the inspiration to this book. And it was constantly a battle between my mother, sister, and grandmother as to whose gumbo was the right way and the best way.
I have to tell you, okay, if you have like three things at home to cook in that are cast iron, you can put almost everything in them.
Yeah.
And a cast iron Dutch oven is like one of those magical things. You can throw anything in there almost, and it's just such a friendly way to cook food. I mean, it's heavy, it's sort of lumbarous, but cooking food in there just tastes so delicious.
Francis actually gave me a cast iron Dutch oven for Christmas this year, Le Creuset.
Yeah. Oh, great gift.
And yeah, it was a nice gift.
When we come back from the news, I want to talk with our listening audience about what kind of foods do particularly well in cast iron, and maybe talk about a couple of recipes from your book. Would that be cool?
That's excellent.
Great. Our guest is Dwayne Ridgeway. His book is Cast Iron Cooking. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Dwayne Ridgeway. He writes niche cookbooks like Indoor Grilling, Perfect One-Dish Meals, Pizza. And he joins us today to talk about one of our favorite ways to cook, my favorite way to cook at home. The book is Cast Iron Cooking, 50 Gourmet Quality Dishes from Entrees to Dessert that you can do in cast iron. Now, Dwayne, there are some dishes that I sort of avoid cast iron with. It turns some sauces odd colors. But for the most part, I'll cook most of my food at home in cast iron when I can. Can you talk to us about what does particularly well in cast iron and what doesn't? Maybe give us a couple of ideas from your book.
Absolutely. I think anything blackened, cast iron is the way to go. I have a couple of blackened catfish sandwich. I have a blackened tenderloin in the book, and those things, blackened scallops. Those are, I think those are the great ways. You know, you have all the spices and the rubs to get the blackening, but a cast iron gets so hot and that great coating and that great flavor that those are good cast iron dishes. Talking about Dutch ovens earlier and how user friendly they are and how versatile, fried chicken is a great cast iron dish and probably typical to the South. Because of the even heating
distribution. That's exactly it, even heat.
Yeah, you get that really good hot oil, and it's perfect for fried-type foods. you know, skillets and this cast iron skillet is so versatile. You can bake a cake in it. You can bake a pie in a cast iron Dutch oven. Just about anything. The things to maybe stay away from or be cautious of, and just understanding that there's color changes, is acidic foods like tomato sauces.
Yeah, you don't want to make tomato put tomatoes in there.
Exactly. And
cream
sauces, absolutely. Although gravy, I mean, you can't make a better gravy than in a cast iron skillet. There's just no way around it.
Dwayne, gravy in my family is a tomato sauce.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes, you're right.
Italian,
you're right.
Italian boy, am I right? Yeah.
Exactly.
But we're talking brown gravy.
Brown gravy, exactly.
But you can roast it. I mean, if you have a Dutch oven, you can roast a chicken or a small bird in your Dutch oven, and it's amazing. Like, to stick your chicken, and most people stick a chicken in a roasting pan in the oven. If you have a large Dutch oven, and you put your chicken in a roasting pan, and I sometimes like to cook it covered in a cast iron skillet, just that even slow heat, really, it just enhances the flavor of the food.
Plus all that moisture stays
in it. It's just the right amount of moisture, and it lets the steam escape, but it's all perfect. It's just the right amount.
Just so people know what you look for in any sort of quality cookware, even if you're buying steel pans, what you want is something thick enough and conductive enough that it doesn't create, with the bane of any pan is hot spots. Mm-hmm. That's why thin pans aren't very good, because you get a little ring of heat around where the flame is touching the pan, and that's where you burn stuff and stuff sticks and you don't get a nice even cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Cast iron, I think, fell out of fashion because it's heavy, because you need to know a little bit how to use it, and because it heats up very slowly.
Right.
It heats up slowly, and then it holds that heat in and of itself for a long time. Same principle behind a brick oven pizza. You know,
right.
it maintains that nice even heat that it holds for a long time. But there are a couple of things that I use. I have some bare cast iron, which is the stuff that's just iron, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe easier to use is, Mark made allusion to, I bought him a Le Creuset pot. Le Creuset is a brand of it's cast iron.
We're going to say it's a really expensive brand,
yeah,
too, so beware.
By the way, the cast iron stuff you can find is not going to be very expensive comparatively, and it will last forever. The Le Creuset stuff is cast iron coated with enamel, which if you hit it with a hammer, you can break the enamel. But the pot will still be there. But you have... With the enamel, you have a sort of a ready-made nonstick surface. Will you talk to us about the various types of covered stainless steel pots like Le Creuset
cast iron?
Cast iron.
Absolutely. And the thing that Le Creuset has done is they've kind of, you know, I was saying how it's become, or we've saying how it's becoming more fashionable, is the array of bright, vibrant colors that they do with their Dutch ovens and skillets and stuff that make them very attractive. But they've also introduced the wok. The cast iron family, and something called a tagine or a tagine that's South African style cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really kind of introduced new and very exciting ways of cooking with cast iron.
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference. You know, I like raw cast iron to cook with to get that sear and that browning effect, but Le Creuset is good for, you know, for that ease of cooking as well. So you have more of that almost Teflon coating to them and that nonstick coating.
It's Teflon, but it's not dangerous. Well, I can't say on the radio that Teflon is dangerous because I'm afraid of getting sued. But you know, if you heat Teflon to the Teflon manufacturer, say 500 degrees, some other scientists say 300 degrees, it's gonna, and you have a bird in your kitchen, it'll kill the bird. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not a bird, but I'm just...
I want to read...
My great-great-grandfather might have been a coal miner, so when the bird dies, I throw the pan out. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, cast iron doesn't do that. But the coated cast iron gives you that nonstick surface.
It does.
I just want to read something, since we're talking about Teflon. Marion Burroughs recently did an article about cooking on cast iron versus cooking on other things. And one of the things that she wrote here was, what led to this step were unsettling reports that overheated Teflon-coated pans may release toxic gases. DuPont, the manufacturer of Teflon, says that pans are safe and that their surfaces won't decompose, possibly releasing the gas until the pan's temperature reaches 680 degrees. Some scientists say that an empty pan left on a burner set on high reaches 700 degrees in as little as 3 minutes.
Okay. You killed my bird.
But I don't want you to kill my kid.
Well,
so.
You know what, though? I don't want the toxic gases at all. 700 degrees, 600. You know, if you heat a cast iron pan all the way to 800 degrees, it turns red. And then let it cool down.
And it's funny because...
Exactly.
a lot of the things that you're looking for with a Teflon pan, you can get from a cast iron pan. And I had some Teflon pans a few years back. I got rid of all of them because, you know, I don't, who wants to expose to some kind of potential problem?
What do you think? Are there any disadvantages to the enamel-coated cast iron pans besides their extremely high cost?
I would think, you know, I have a lot of them. I've tested with a lot of them. I see, you know, you start to see scratches around the outside of the surface because the lids are so heavy and when you store them in that way. With cast iron in general, I certainly will admit and be the first to admit it is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, for some people, that's just not feasible to have such heavy dishes.
Sure. My mom would have trouble lugging those around now at this stage. But
definitely. Yeah. I have a 17-inch cast iron, open cast iron dish that I grunt when I pull it out of the oven, but I absolutely love the thing. But, you know, I can't think of anything, another disadvantage of them. They're great pans, and they clean very easily. Even if you do have sticking to them, the thing with the enamel coating is you take that SOS pad, that scrub pad, and you can use it right on the enamel.
Yep, absolutely. Well, and again, with cast iron cookware that's raw cast iron that you have at home, you don't, once you have it seasoned, you won't get sticking, and you don't use the SOS pad. You don't use soap, really. You just rinse that off, and you leave that coating on there, and that just, as years go by, your pan develops its own personality, and it's amazing to cook in.
Absolutely, and I think that's a hard thing to get through to people. They always want to wash their pans and get that food off of them, but cast iron, that's exactly what you want. That's where you get the flavor out of cast iron cooking.
Well, you want to get, like, the sticky potatoes off.
You want to
scrub the residue out with a brush.
But you want to leave that coating of fat there, and as that coating of fat over time, I mean, that's really what it is. It's fat on top of the because that cast iron holds onto that one layer of fat, but then that layer of fat becomes almost part of the cast iron, and that's what keeps you from sticking on. My grandmother's pan and my mother's pans, they look shiny and black and smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because the cast iron's smooth. It's because the pan is very well seasoned after years and years of use.
It's baked a layer right on it.
Wasn't there one of those burger places we did? We had George Motz on from who did the movie Hamburger USA, who has like some their grease is an amalgam of 90-year-old grease and the recent grease.
Right, they never change the grease.
They fry their burgers and they've never actually changed the grease.
I love that.
That's great.
Hey, listen, Dwayne. When we come back, I want to talk about some things that people might not expect that they can cook in cast iron and do a really great job with, like desserts and pies and things like that, and the great advantages that come from having a slow heating, even cooking. Medium like that.
Excellent.
Super.
Absolutely.
We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Dwayne Ridgeway. His book is Cast Iron Cooking, 50 Gourmet Quality Dishes from Entrees to Desserts. We'll be talking about desserts right after the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. This is Francis Schott. I'm here with Mark Pascal. Our guest today is Dwayne Ridgeway. His book is Cast Iron Cooking. We were talking before the break about how to cook with cast iron. By the way, you can find out about Dwayne's book on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. You can find out where to go and buy it. You can find out about Le Creuset. They have a website. A lot of these cast iron pans, you may have some in the basement or your mom's basement or garage somewhere. It's easy to restore raw cast iron cookery. And the enamel-coated cast iron like Le Creuset is one of my favorite things to cook with. I gave Mark a Le Creuset pot for Christmas. They're very expensive, but, you know, you'll give them to your great-grandchildren.
But I'm worth it.
You'll give them to your great-grandchildren. Now, something people may not realize is, you know, people who have Le Creuset pots, some people have, you know, three Le Creuset pots and cook everything in them.
Mm-hmm.
You have a section on desserts and cast iron. How do you cook dessert in cast iron, and what advantages does it bring? What kind of stuff can you cook?
There is desserts in the book and some great ones. The way I divided the book up is into kind of styles of the cast iron dishes that you're using. And people might not realize that in a cast iron skillet, you can bake a cobbler.
Mm-hmm.
You can bake a rustic-shelled pie. Rustic-shelled meaning it's just the dough is, you know, in the form of the cast iron skillet, not necessarily a pie plate.
Mm-hmm.
A pineapple upside-down cake. I have a pineapple coconut upside-down cake. And upside-down cake is baked, you know, specifically in a skillet. And cast iron, again, one of those. I don't think you can get a better caramelization, a better crusting on those pineapples with that kind of caramel topping than you do in a cast iron skillet. And great things about Le Creuset and Lodge as a manufacturer of cast iron, Lodge probably one of the most well-known, is they make unique pans, and some of them are muffin or biscuit-shaped pans. Hmm. So I have a gingerbread cupcakes that I've baked in those pans.
You know, one of the other things, if you're cooking at home, that people may not realize, if you're cooking a steak or something or a bigger piece of meat, one of the things that professional chefs do often is you sear something, you know, on the outside, especially a thicker cut of meat. You sear it on the stovetop in a very hot pan.
Mm-hmm.
But then you finish it in the oven, because if you want that high heat in the beginning to sear and brown the outside of it. But then you finish it in the oven, because if you kept it on that high heat all the time, you'd burn the outside and not cook the inside.
Right.
With a cast iron pan, it's the same pan. You start, like I do rabbit, and you sear the rabbit in my Dutch oven, which I start off on the stove, and I brown the whole thing. Then I put a bottle of wine in there and a bunch of vegetables, and I just move the same pan into the oven. And unlike most, you know, plastic-handled pans or thinner pans, they don't do so well in the oven. Cast iron can go right from the stovetop into the oven, and then out on top again.
Be really careful, though. Make sure you use your pot holders when it comes out. One of the things about cast iron is everything gets hot.
They are hot. And you bring up a great topic. I mean, it's braising at its best in your Dutch ovens.
Yep.
Going from the stovetop with that liquid, that moist cooking, and that searing of the steaks like you're talking about, or tuna. Tuna is great in that way. It's locking in that moisture and those flavors.
Now we talked about one of the important things if you're going to use cast iron is to have a seasoning on the pan, and you develop that seasoning either by long use, where you just, if you use it every day, the better it gets, or the way you season a pan is you scrub it down clean, you put on some sort of high smoke point vegetable oil to start off your seasoning, and then you bake it for an hour to sort of bake that into place.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain, once you have a well seasoned pan, how do you maintain the seasoning on that pan?
The easiest way is every time after you're cooking, again, no soap. It's just hot water and a good scrubbing, good elbow grease into it, scrubbing away whatever needs to, you know, the topping, the crumbs and such, if you will, on the skillet. And then, again, what I suggest to do is go back into the oven and thoroughly dry your skillet off, and that prevents the rusting. Water will create the rust on your cast iron. So I go back into the oven and just the hot oven that you've already been using, or preheat your oven, or do it on the stovetop again, and get it good and dry. And then another layer, just spray it with vegetable oil again and wipe it with a towel. And every time you use it, that extra coating of vegetable oil just creates that seasoning.
And I know people who store their cast iron actually in their oven. So what they do is they use it, then it goes back into the oven and into the warm oven, and it's taken care of.
Hey,
it's taken care of, right.
We don't really have a lot of time to talk about this, but one of the things I thought was interesting is you allude to the long history of cast iron in the book as well. I mean, cast iron's been cooked with for a long time, right?
Absolutely. 7th and 8th century Europe is, I think, the earliest that I could find that cast iron was out there. Immigrants, 16th century European immigrants to the new land, were bringing them as their heirloom, kind of good quality heirloom tools.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis and Clark, exploration of the Pacific Northwest, have, you know, it's noted that they packed their Dutch oven in 1804. So I think that's probably the most notable use. Martha Washington bequeathed her cast iron cooking in her will. So very, very interesting and historical past.
I mean, any time in this country where you saw people venturing towards the West, you know, what do you see hanging from the side of the wagon? The chuck wagons. You see the cast iron skillets.
Well, it became so popular that chuck wagons were, you know, built and constructed with specific compartments for those huge Dutch ovens.
That's awesome. Hey, you know, and one of the things that's crazy about the cast iron cookery is people get so invested in it. If when someone has taken years and years to develop a great seasoning on their pan, when you bequeath it to someone, you're like, and don't mess it up.
That's my grandmother's. That's the Dutch oven I have.
Hey, Dwayne, we have to run, but I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to be on the show with us and talk about your book.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
It's been swell, and we're going to go cook something on cast iron later on. That was Dwayne Ridgeway. His book is Cast Iron Cooking. You can find out more about it on our website. You can find out about cast iron cooking in general. This is the kind of thing where I recommend people do at home, and you have one or two cast iron things at home, and the cast iron Dutch oven is to die for. And if you want to spend the money on the Le Creuset stuff, it's great for eggs every morning.
And don't go crazy. You don't have to invest in 15 different pans. You're better off with one or two pans that you use every day.
Absolutely, because if you have more pans, they sit on the side. You need to use it every day. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. This is Francis Lamarck here from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick. We spent today talking about cast iron cooking. Dwayne Ridgeway was our guest. His book is Cast Iron Cooking, 50 Gourmet Quality Dishes from Entrees to Desserts.
I actually remember years before we started doing the restaurant, I had, like I said, one of my first set of cookware was cast iron cookware, and one of the reasons is because it was relatively inexpensive to buy a nice set of cast iron cookware.
Uh-huh.
Well, like most people, I used one pan all the time, and the other, like, nine pans just sat around. And I remember you came over to my house one day, and you scolded me for letting my cast iron just rust away, get all gross. And you're like, "What are you doing? Beautiful cast iron cookware. You got to leave it. What are you doing? You got to cheese. You got to." I was like, "This one's good."
And you thought, I'm in Sigma Pi fraternity and in college. You're lucky I use a pan at all.
No, we were just out of college. I was living in my first little home rental.
Oh, man.
And you abused me mercilessly. I remember it well.
It's nice to have something in this day and age where things are made of plastic and broke. I dropped my cell phone holder this morning and it smashed into a million pieces. This cast iron cookware you can hit with a hammer and put back in the cast iron stove.
And the enamelized stuff is great as well, but the regular cast iron, one of the things that Francis and I were talking about earlier in the show is it is indestructible. Indestructible. You can scratch it with a fork. If you do take a Brillo to it, if your mom or soaps up the pan and gets it all soapy, you season it again, you start over.
The thing about the cast iron cookware, it really is amazing for braised things or for even, I like to take chicken or birds or Cornish hens and put them in my Dutch oven, and I throw some vegetables and wine on the bottom there. And what I do is I take them and I put the Dutch oven on the top. I get it really hot. I put some flour on the birds and I sear them to get them nice and crisp.
Mm-hmm.
Then I turn them over so the breast side is up. I put the wine in the pan and I put them in the oven and I put the top on. And it's just, it falls off the bone. It's so beautiful, and it's so maintenance-free.
Yeah, the long cooking, the slow cooking where the bird just kind of falls off the bone but stays really moist. You know, we talked in another show about, 180 degrees is how hot you need to get your turkey. You could actually get a bird to 180 degrees and still have it be moist and delicious when you do it in one of these cast iron Dutch ovens.
And you know what I'll do? I have a rabbit recipe that I'll stick up on the web a little bit later. It might take me a day or two to get up there. I got to find it. But I have a braised rabbit recipe in a cast iron Dutch oven. It's amazing. Hope you enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.